Blog Talk Radio.
Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And I can't tell you that every time I hear that Imperial March, the Darth Vader theme song, it just gets me fired up. And for those of you that are marking your first adventure into my realm tonight, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis. And they specialize in a plethora of art forms. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic and dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com or follow me at jvhilliardbooks on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube, or look for me as JV Hilliard on Facebook or on my Discord channel. So as we are reaching our witching hour, let me cast my magic message spell and take control of the magical airwaves a Blog Talk Radio, and for you D&D nerds out there like me, unabashedly, unashamedly like me, the duration of my transmutation magic here is about 30 minutes, so set your sundials and let's enter the realm together. Today we have been chronicling the adventures of two very different creatives. First, we have a fellow speculative fiction scribe, Heidi Nickerson, who is the author of The Salamander Stone. And on the other side of this, we have a voice actor and an audiobook producer, Todd Waits, from Todd Waits Voice and Twin Tales Audio in Texas. Heidi and Todd, well met and welcome to the realm.
Thank
Howdy.
You.
Thanks
so,
for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Happy to have you guys. Heidi, ladies first, I'll start with you. Tell our listeners about yourself and what you write and where they can find you.
Oh, man. Yeah, you can search Heidi Nickerson. I would say I'm most active on BookTok or TikTok these days, but my website, HeidiNickerson.com, that's where you can find out a lot of information about my book. It's the first in what I'm planning for a trilogy. And, yeah, it was my debut novel, so it released earlier this year, and it's kind of young adult fantasy horror. I'm really excited to be on the show to kind of chat a little bit more about all of the creative things. But, yeah, that's one of the ways you can find me.
Great. And Todd, give our listeners a bit of your background and what you do to help authors looking for a voice for their words.
Yeah, sure. I've been working with my voice for about 20 years now. Gosh, can't believe it's been that long. But started off doing live events, commercials, narration things. Then I got into the audiobooks and did, I've been audiobook narrating for 10 years now. And now with Twin Tales Audio, producing audiobooks and helping authors find narrators for their books, especially indie authors and those who can't access the ACX because they're in other countries, we're real big on helping them as well.
Well, great. Thanks for your intros. And I'm going to just dive right in, and I'll start with you, Heidi. The Salamander Stone. I had a chance to meet you in person a couple of weeks ago at GalaxyCon in Raleigh, and I picked up your book. I just downloaded it on Amazon. I started to read it, and I've heard you describe your novel as Teen Wolf meets Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I think is a really, really cool, interesting way to describe your work. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind it and what it was that brought you to write a young adult fantasy horror novel like this.
Oh, man. There's a lot that goes into writing books, as I'm sure you know, and anybody who's kind of attempted something like that, where a big part of it is obviously Buffy and Teen Wolf are kind of designed for that teen demographic. And I know that maybe there are other urban fantasy stories for younger readers that, you know, as far as books, like, you know, serialized books, they are around, but I've been reading a lot of Jim Butcher, the Dresden Files, And those are more kind of that serialized, like whodunit kind of mystery solving. And just the way that he brought the mundane parts of everyday life and interwove it with kind of the everyday monster down the street. You know, you have your crime boss who also may or may not have, you know, different supernatural abilities or something like that. So I really liked a lot of his world building. And in general, I just kind of fell in love with fantasy as a genre, urban fantasy and just, you know, different types of fantasy as well. During the pandemic, I was doing a lot of listening to audiobooks and reading. And it was a genre that I hadn't dug too much into a younger reader, but as an adult, I really just loved. So that was a big part of it. And it's funny that you mentioned Dungeons & Dragons because I have a cousin who does a lot with in the D&D space. He's created campaigns and, you know, created a bestiary, like a big glossary of different monsters, which I actually own a copy of. And he kind of released that on his own. And in having that, that inspired a lot of the world building of my own series, kind of finding different monsters that I really wanted to include in the story. So it has your typical urban fantasy stuff with, you know, shapeshifters, vampires, and different things like that. But I wanted it to be for that younger reader where it will and kind of just embodying a lot of the feelings that people had during the pandemic and how the world was suddenly a lot weirder and scarier than we had predicted or expected it to be before all of that happened.
You know, I'm disappointed in you, Heidi. I spent 4 days with you, and you did not tell me about this book. You know, I mean, you said it was your cousin that wrote
yeah.
it. And I'm the biggest D&D nerd. You're one of the world's biggest D&D nerds standing next to you, and you didn't tell me that? I could have bought that, too.
So I know he's doing a second release of it. It's called The Epic of Dreams. And I can, his name is Drew Cochran. It's called The Epic of Dreams. You can search that, in connection to, I know there's an Instagram account he has. It's a small production that he's got, but I know that he's released a few different editions of it. I think one of them was like a basilisk edition. I can send you all that information, later.
He sounds like a future guest.
Yeah. Let me tell you,
he's right in the wheelhouse of the realm.
No, I love him. He's so funny. We're cousins. He's a great time. I love him a lot. But yeah, it's really great how, to be honest, there are a lot of people that I am, like, I have multiple cousins that are writers. It is kind of a very funny thing that, like, there are a lot of musicians in my family, and it seems like all of their kids kind of became artists or writers or different things like that. So I have a few cousins that do it, but yeah, Drew and I, we talk a lot about nerdy fantasy stuff. So,
well, Todd, you're a little different here. You're not writing books like Heidi and I, but you're turning books into words. And I've always loved the fact that, you know, sometimes as a dungeon master, I tell a story. It's a verbal thing for my D&D campaigns. And I respect what you do because you've got to capture people and bring them right into the book. So how did you get started in voice acting? Obviously you have a good voice for it. We all could hear that plainly on the show here, but how did you know you're going to be successful at it? You know, where did this start?
Well, I was, like I said, I was doing sports announcing for different venues and doing a lot of driving and got tired of talk radio, got tired of the same top 40 radio. So I started listening to audiobooks. And as the more I listened to it, I was, you know, that guy that says, I can do that. So I started, you know, researching it, getting some training, and, you know, started auditioning. I think I got my third book that I auditioned for and haven't looked back.
So how do you change voices from genre to genre? Do you have like a... Like you mentioned, it sounded like you took some acting classes to get better at it, or does that come natural for you?
The acting, I took some, but not as much as far as narration techniques. But I've been a goofball my whole life, you know, so that part came natural. But, you know.
Made it easy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the club, but, my friend. It's all right. You're among friends.
I always tell people, you know, the hard part is already done because the author tells you, you know, what the tone of the book is, you know, what the characters are and everything like that. So I don't really have to delve too deep into myself to try to figure out who these people are, because the author's already told me who they are. So, you know, I
think that's a really good point. Very good point.
Yeah, take my cues from the text, and, you know, if you listen to the text, you're going to find out who the characters are. I mean, you know, if they say, you know, this character is a bumbling idiot, you know you're not going to come up with a voice like that because it's totally against what the author is telling you.
Yeah, the cool calculated murderer type, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to come up with some guy who's going to be bumbling. Oh, no, did I do that? Okay, I'm sorry. Oh, I knocked that over. You know, it's all the cues are there. You've just got to take time to see them.
Well, Heidi, coming back to you on this one, you know, as a young adult fantasy reader myself, it's near and dear to me. I grew up reading speculative fiction, both in sci-fi and fantasy. And was there a reason that you chose to write in the genre, and in particular for a young adult audience?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. When you sit down to write a book, I feel like some people are like, oh, I'm so inspired to write this type of story or this type of character. And for me, a lot of the process of creating a book is just actually getting into the chair. And then I know that some people, like, hate this description of the creative process because – and it's not always like this. There are some days that are a slog. But because I've got just so much nonsense in my brain all the time, like, once I sit down and actually work on something, it kind of becomes a thing of its own. So, I mean, I definitely was a huge reader when I was growing up. I read a lot in, you know, middle grade and young adult as well. But a lot of my reading when I was younger was more on the – I did a lot of, like, romantic comedy reading, to be honest, and I actually liked that because – I enjoy a lot of the dialogue and the like witty banter to me is some of my favorite stuff to read, no matter the genre. So I like to, you know, the fact that I have that kind of basis of readership before I got into, you know, fantasy and speculative fiction. And then actually what made audio, like audiobooks actually made a lot of the more epic fantasy series less daunting for me because I just find that listening to a story, I can really dial into the universe of it a lot easier. So yeah, some of those like bigger books where it's it's a little more intimidating on the shelf. But that was something that definitely got me into the genre a little bit more. And I'm trying to think of any specific, you know, young adult fantasy horror or fantasy or horror writing, you know, just kind of that genre as far as younger readers, but I think a lot of it comes down to it, this is kind of a silly one. It's not so much fantasy, but like Animorphs was a very formative one when I was younger, where they, because shapeshifting is a big part of the story building that I write in the book. So I think that was part of it, where there are some things that I've read that just kind of inspired it. But to be honest, you know, I had tried to write a few novels prior to this one. And it just came down to sitting down and being like, I'm going to sit down a few days within a week or a span of a couple of weeks and just try to write in different genres and see where I feel most comfortable. And it just happened to be that writing a young adult, you know, protagonist at that point, that's where my brain wanted to go. That's kind of the character I wanted to explore. And it was a really good time. I was able to really channel a lot of that, like, working your first summer job kind of feelings and, you know, going back to either like some past memories and also just creating new things as well. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sure that your explanation a little earlier about the fact that you used audiobooks as music to Todd's ears. So, Todd, many of our listeners are readers, right? And some of them are authors. But for those authors out there that are listening that haven't been through the process of creating an audiobook, it can be daunting for them. I know that when I had my first audiobook done, I didn't know anything about it. And you're sort of at the mercy of the producer and the narrator. But can you walk our listeners through what it takes to create an audiobook and its achievability? Like, how long does it take? What can they expect as the process goes on? Because it sounds like you're like, you know, stuff goes on behind the curtain and all of a sudden, voila, you know, here's an audiobook. But it doesn't really work like that way, does it?
Doesn't at all. First, you have to read the book before you even start. Like I always like to say, you have to know the story before you can tell the story. So you have to read the book so you know where it's going. Do all your research, you know, any pronunciation, other things like that. And, you know, like I said, you got to make your character notes as you're going through. So let's say it's an eight hour audiobook. It's going to take you 8 hours at minimum to read the book. So, and then you start the recording process. Now, it can take, depending on the subject of the book and the complexity of the writing or so, you can spend between 4 to 6 or 7 hours just to produce 1 hour of finished audio. So an 8 hour audiobook can take a total of about, you know, 35 to 48 hours to produce. And then you've got to listen to the book afterwards, you know, to make sure you said all the words correctly and make sure you've, you know, edited all the pacing or any little extraneous noises out before, you know. So you've got all of that work just to produce 8 hours of audio.
And have you ever had a situation where an author's come back and not liked it and told you they needed to do a greater portion of it over again or start over, or do they listen to it as you're doing it to make sure that you're on track, or how does that part work?
Some people, you know, give it to their authors piecemeal, you know, chapter at a time. Well, the way my process is, I can't do that because I record the entire book and then do the editing and then break it out into chapters, and the proofer listens to it and sends it back. But earlier in my career, I had one author that didn't like a certain character's voice. But luckily, it wasn't, you know, too difficult to go back and just re-record that one character. So, but ever since then, I've never had an author come back to me and say, oh, God, I hate it. Why did I ever hire you?
Well, you know, that might have been tough, especially with the amount of hours that you're putting into this thing. But Heidi, let me ask you this too, because I mean, Todd just helped me answer a business question on his end. I'm going to throw a little business question at you too. I know that you're not only an author, but you've worked in a publishing house before. I mean, do you have any advice for the authors that are listening tonight that are seeking to go, you know, the traditional publishing way? Or would you advise them to try to go the indie authoring way first? I mean, do you have a preferred from someone that worked in the industry and saw it from that side of the table, which do you prefer and why?
It's a great question. I mean, everybody's path, I think, is going to be different. I know I initially was really hesitant to self-publish just because there's a lot of parts of building a book that it's really hard to imagine how to figure all of that out on your own and to guarantee a quality product. And then, you know, let's say you do, you know, have some posts, if you are posting on social media or different things, like let's say you have some do well and you get a lot of pre-orders, like, you know, if all of the release details are on your shoulders from a self-publishing standpoint, there's just a lot of anxiety on my end with that. So I was really hesitant to go the self-publishing route, and there is still a part of me that is. I ended up releasing my book with a small press that also was the one that I had been working with, kind of sometimes full-time, sometimes in a part-time, like, freelance position. So I did have a really wonderful experience with them as far as the design of the book. And, you know, when you're working with a small press, there are always going to be limitations there with how much they can provide for you from a marketing standpoint. But the, you know, the quality of the product that the final product I was really happy with, and a lot of the release details there, I have seen many different, you know, sides of it. And in general, there weren't a whole lot of big hiccups there because they've done it so many times before with different, you know, types of authors. So, I do feel like when you are first dipping your toes into the publishing space, it's never a bad thing to take your book that you've worked on and query it. So if you're not familiar with that term, it's when you write the book and you draft it, you edit it, you either, you know, on your own hire an editor or a proofreader or things like that. You don't have to hire an editor at that stage, but they kind of say try to make it as clean as you can either on your end or, you know, with an editor or just by yourself. And essentially, you then send it to a literary agent, and if they see potential in the manuscript that you have, then they will sign you as an author under their, you know, the authors they represent, and they will take your manuscript on submission to different publishing houses to see if any big major publishers will take it. And that's not just the big five that they send it to, but it is you know, they the majority of what everybody's looking for is the big five publishers, or I believe it might even be four now. It's been a minute since I've looked at things. But, yeah, I mean, in general, I think your publishers, the bigger ones are the ones where you get the bigger advances and the idea that you'll have more marketing support. So, like, you know, I think everybody starting out sees that as, like, a golden ticket into, you know, seeing the career ahead of you. The reality is that when you look at the numbers, a lot of people in traditional publishing, you know, some of them do sell a lot of copies and some of them don't. Royalties don't get to you for a long time when you go through traditional publishing. And oftentimes, you know, you may not even sell out your advance. So there, it's not necessarily that it's not a bad thing to go the traditional publishing route if you can get an agent and if you can get signed. But there are, it's not just that, oh, you're, it's going to be smooth sailing on that side of the aisle either. I would recommend somebody starting out. I think that querying is a great way to get to know people in the industry, to get your, you know, to get your feet wet a little bit. So to take your manuscript and submit it. And then, you know, you may have an agent who sees potential in it and maybe sends you some notes and says, I like what I see here, but maybe I don't, you know, I would recommend fixing this and maybe submit it to me again. And that's like one of the best options for somebody who's brand new to all of it, getting actual feedback and not just a form submission. Agents right now are so behind. I would say, you know, I mentioned COVID earlier, and a lot of people wrote books during COVID, so they got very behind from that period of time, and I have no idea what their wait times are, but it used to not be as, it used to not take as long as my understanding, and now the process can take up to, you know, 9 months plus to wait on a rejection, not even a, oh, yeah, send me your full manuscript sort of thing. So it is kind of an exhausting period to be in, and I feel like there are ways to kind of navigate that. But I would say if it's your first time looking into that side of things and maybe sending out a few queries to see how that goes. But I also am a big proponent of, there are so many resources for authors available now that, you know, that fear of self-publishing, if you are able to connect with people organically online to find your community, then there's no reason why you can't initially self-publish a series. And what's wonderful about self-publishing is you own all of your material. You can do anything you want with that series down the line. And if it does well enough in your pocket of your community, it can eventually get picked up by a bigger publisher. So, that's kind of a long-winded way of saying everybody's going to find their own path. But I definitely think, you know, looking into querying, and if that doesn't go well, trying out self-publishing with an initial release, because you still will have a lot of that creative control, and you have a lot of it. You'll learn a ton about the process by doing it that way, if that makes any sense.
That was well answered. I appreciate that. And Todd, I'm going to come back to you. You're going to be the last question before we go into our lightning round here. But I'm curious about this, because you mentioned at the top that you started out, you know, using your voice professionally in sports broadcasting. So I want to see where you go with this question, but do you have a dream project? And what I mean by that is, I know your dream job might be doing books, you know, for all I know, but, you know, do you see yourself doing movie stuff, or do you see yourself doing something with TV, or can you see yourself being like the voice of the guy in a sports movie or something like that? Like, do you have a dream project as a voice actor? I mean, what would it be? Or do you already have it with books?
Well, you know, I'm really enjoying the audiobooks, but if I had to just come up with one dream job that if I could do this, this is what I would do. You know, I'd be like narrating TV shows like on the Discovery Channel, you know, somebody like Mike Rowe with what he does. I mean, to me, that would just be the ultimate. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be so much fun, too. It's almost like you've got that. I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's just that kind of stuff is some of the stuff that a guy like he gets to do is just super, super cool. So, well, good answer. Well, hey, look, we're coming to the end of the show. We only have about 5 minutes left. And we're going to go through this lightning round. So I've got four or five pointed questions for you guys, and I need short answers. But I'm going to throw these out at you. And, Heidi, I'll start with you. You have a chance to cast yourself in any movie, past, present, or future. Which character would you be and why?
Oh, man. Okay.
30 seconds, Heidi. 30 seconds.
Okay. I have so many movies. I know. I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's so many movies. Honestly, you know, getting into Teen Wolf, I feel like that one would be a wild time, even if it was just an extra to see Michael J. Fox in that getup. I think that would be great.
All right, how about you, Todd? What movie, past, present, or future, which character?
Inigo Montoya.
you killed my father. Prepare to die. Oh, well,
that's
answered. I gotta give you a point on that one, man. That's really well done. Well done. All right. So, Todd, I'll stick with you for a second. You have a magic door in your house, and when you open it, you're whisked away, and you can move your recording booth anywhere in the world. Where would you go?
Oh, man. The mountains.
All right.
Somewhere in the mountains,
secluded,
in the middle of nowhere.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Away from everybody.
I got you. All right, Heidi, where you don't have a recording booth, you've got a writing studio. So you open this magical door, the magic whisks you away, and you can move your writing studio to anywhere. Where does Heidi write?
Yeah, I would say somewhere, you know, like I had, yeah, I would say somewhere in maybe Germany, but still very mountainous, idyllic, with some like milk cows wandering the countryside where you can hear their little bells. I think that would be great.
All right, that's cool. See, you're like the hills are alive with Heidi Nickerson, right?
Yes. Yeah, I can take breaks from writing and just go run and sing in the hills.
All right, so Heidi, I'm going to stick with you on this one. Who is your least favorite literary character of all times?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That is such a hard question because I am incredibly sympathetic to, I mean, obviously villains, right? You have villains that you don't like.
Well, maybe not. I mean, yeah. Look, everybody asks you who's your favorite. I'm asking you who's your least favorite.
Gosh. Trying to think of the most recent thing I read because it's, what's really funny,
got
I guess I'll
seconds.
Say this is,
all this
right.
Is
well,
lightning
I'll,
round, Heidi. Lightning
I'm,
round.
I know. I'm so bad at this. Yeah, I'm going to have to pass on that. That's such a huge
oh, you
like,
pass.
I'm struggling.
Oh, boo.
I know.
Boo.
I'll,
oh,
I'll
you can mail
maybe
it. Tell me later.
I'll mail it.
How about you, Todd? Who's your least favorite literary character of all time?
Wilbur from Charlotte's Web. God, that
oh,
kid was
God.
A whiner.
Oh, is that a
he
good
call? He did nothing
call?
But whine all the time.
All the time. And his name was Wilbur, for God's sakes. I mean,
yeah.
What are you doing with that?
Now.
Yeah. All right, so last question. Todd, I'm throwing this to you. Oh, wait, did you say you have an answer now, Heidi?
I was just going to say Oliver Twist for the exact same reason.
Oh, okay. All right, Oliver Twist. All right, well, look, I'm still starting with Todd. Last question, Todd. Toughest criticism you've ever received? Get ready, Heidi. That's coming towards you next.
God, oh, man. How did he put it? You sound like a person who just came off the street and it's his first time behind the microphone.
Oh. Oh. How about you, Heidi? That's a tough one. Can you beat that?
I had someone tell me there are illustrations in my book, and they said, not enough pictures of cute emo girls in your book, and they were upset about it. So I'm going to say that.
That is so random.
Yeah, it's such a hilarious thing to talk about. But it was a funny one. I liked it. So I think that's what I'll put for that one.
Well, look, we've got a less than a minute left. Heidi, real quickly, remind everybody how they can find you. And Todd, you're up after her.
Yeah, you can search for Heidi Nickerson pretty much anywhere. I'm mostly active on TikTok. I have a very small Instagram. But, yeah, I would say HeidiNickerson.com. You can find information. And The Salamander Stone is my first novel in the Beowulf Brigade series. I'm working on book two, and that is hopefully going to come out next year.
Todd?
Okay, well, you can – my website, ToddWaitsVoice.com. And, you know, Facebook, Instagram, anything – Todd Waits. But if you come across the one-armed keyboardist, that's not me.
I don't know what that means, but we're going to leave it at that. Todd, Heidi, thank you very much for being on The Realm tonight. And for those listening, again, thank you. I will check you out next Wednesday. 9 p.m., same bat time, same bat channel. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.